Please silence all electronic devices.
Even a global health pandemic can be politicized. And that is something that I think we've got to fix. The first thing we fix is gerrymandering so that we are all in the middle where good governing happens.
How many one-on-one conversations have you had with Tim Moore since September 11th of 2019?
Any further discussion or debate?
From the hollow of hangers, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff DeBeery. Glad to have you along as always. Today, another one of our long-form conversations, and it is with Deb Butler, a Democrat in the North Carolina House. She serves New Hanover County, and she joined me from her home in Wilmington. We cover a lot of ground in this conversation, including the racial reckoning happening in the United States right now. Also, that now viral and iconic exchange that she had with North Carolina House Speaker Tim Moore last September 11th, when a surprise veto override vote of the budget was called. And we also talk about the pandemic. We'll get to all those things, but Representative Butler and I begin our conversation talking about the legislative session, which ended just a few days ago.
You know, it ended with extraordinary exhaustion. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of late night governing. I think a lot of mistakes happen. I think a lot of unforeseen consequences from language that gets in at the last second. And it was just grueling.
What was the most significant legislation that you all passed here in the last couple of months?
You know, it's hard to say. We did some things that were really good. The push has been around criminal justice reform, and so there was some work done around expungements of records of youthful offenders. I thought that was significant to allow people to have their second chance, you know, when they've paid their debt to society and done what they needed to do to make amends and to get on with their life and to be productive citizens. So that, to me, was probably the most significant, along with some of the COVID, certainly the COVID funding that we did was critically important. So
obviously limitations to what can get passed from criminal justice reform from your perspective as a Democrat with Republicans leading both chambers. What do you think is, if anything, do you think there's anything else on the criminal justice front that is achievable in the current landscape?
You know, one other thing we did that seemed important to me also was to give judges a little more discretion with these drug sentences. Sometimes we found that that can be really harshly meted out, and it's not fair to, you know, condemn somebody to a lifetime of incarceration for selling marijuana, for example, or something nonsensical like that. So that was important as well. You know, we need bold structural change in these venues, and I don't think we're going to get that with the current leadership. We need to do a lot of work, of course, on criminal justice reform, police brutality. I mean, the list is long.
Stepping back from some of the criminal justice reforms, what were some missed policy opportunities this short session? And I'm not talking about Medicaid expansion or something that was ultimately unlikely to move, but in terms of things that could have advanced and could have made their way to the governor, what didn't emerge that perhaps should have or could have?
You know, I don't understand the resistance toward paying teachers what they deserve. That's always something that is a mystery to me. These folks are charged with the responsibility of training our next generation of citizens and leaders, and we're really doing an abysmal job of rewarding them for their effort. You know, sometimes you'll see Republicans try to manipulate statistics for their own benefit by talking about average teacher pay. And if you read that carefully, there was a piece in the NNO just today, in fact, I think, that talked about how if you talk about teacher averages, you know, you raise the salaries of the folks at the very bottom to a certain point, and it skews the data to make it appear that they're all doing much better than they really are. But look, this is the group that axed master's pay. They have done everything in their power to put more children in fewer classrooms. They've taken the cap off of charter schools. So these are not champions of public education. I don't care what they say. And you only need to look at the Halifax Mall with 20,000 teachers on it about a year and a half ago to know that that is the case.
But I'm wondering where it is you think North Carolina's teacher pay should rank. I think that most people could agree it's not going to be in the top five or the top 10. Is there a number, either in terms of a national ranking or in terms of a dollar amount, that you think lawmakers should be striving for as it pertains to pay for educators?
There's no way in the world that we should be anywhere beneath the national average. I think that is the floor. And that there's no reason we couldn't be third or fourth or fifth in the nation with an aggressive approach. Look, you know, we used to be the shining star of education. And I will tell you one thing. People who say, well, you can manipulate the data and you can talk about teacher pay. Let's face it, teacher pay is being subsidized by municipalities and counties across this state. And the statistic, if you want to use them, that it's more probative than any, is that we have no teachers in our pipeline. We're 30% down in terms of those who seek to be teachers. So if it's such a great paying position, if it's so rewarding, if they have teacher's assistants and master's pay and all these things, which they do not have, you'd see more people signing up to be teachers, but they're not in North Carolina.
So life as we've long known it or expected it to exist really has been upended here in the last 3.5 months or so. From your perspective as a legislator, this has included remote meetings, a less packed building. What was the most different or unnerving part about COVID-19 and your job as a state lawmaker here in recent weeks and months?
You know, Jeff, honestly, as I have become a little more seasoned as a legislator, I've come to realize that, oddly enough, gerrymandering has so polarized the body as to almost paralyze it. And that is truly a regrettable circumstance. You know, if I, as a Democrat, know that if I win my primary, I don't have to listen to anybody else, then it's necessarily making me more liberal and left and progressive than I would otherwise be, perhaps. And the same is true on the other side. So when we get to Jones Street now, there's just very little negotiation going on. And I had hoped for a moment in this COVID crisis that we were going to see more of that. Maybe we were going to have a transformative moment. And we did there for about 2 weeks as we were gathering the dollars to spread around to assist our citizens. But when we got back to the chamber and mask wearing was not made mandatory, I can see that now even science is politicized. So it's kind of disparaging, to say the least. Dispiriting is the word I'm looking for, to say the least, to know that even a global health pandemic can be politicized. And that is something that I think we've got to fix. The first thing we fix is gerrymandering so that we are all in the middle where good governing happens. And we make all the districts competitive by the use of an independent commission who draws the maps instead of legislators like myself. And we all get back in the middle and fight it out and relearn the art of compromise, which is what we've just got to do.
So let's step back, I guess, to policy for a moment, because I suppose there's still time. It's dwindling, but I suppose there's still time for lawmakers to put forth a constitutional referendum and potentially truly reform redistricting. Somebody said to me years ago that if it was ever going to happen, it would happen in the year that ended in a 9 or a 0 because you're coming up on redistricting. Do you have any sense of whether or not real redistricting form is at all achievable here in 2020?
You know, I think it might not be achievable in 2020, but I think very strongly that if Democrats take the majority after November's election, I do think you'll see it, because it's been 10 years in the desert for us. And I think we've learned a lot of painful lessons. I think, you know, that many of us, if not most, have taken literal pledges, written pledges from various organizations. You know, people like Common Cause and the League of Women Voters and a lot of these organizations have come out to say, you know, we're going to get behind you if you take this pledge to settle this issue once and for all. And I think a great number have. I know I have. And so even if it works to my disadvantage, I am committed to creating some sort of mechanism that redistricts fairly, without partisan influence, so that we can, for the greater good, honestly.
Deb Butler here on the WNC Politics podcast. She's a Democratic House representative from New Hanover County. You can follow her on Twitter at Deb Butler HD18. That's House District 18. Her district, and that district includes much of downtown Wilmington, where I believe you live, where I've been many times. I'm wondering what downtown Wilmington is looking like here in late June, generally speaking, maybe not today on this very day, but what's downtown Wilmington, which is a tourist hotspot, a wonderful place to go have dinner and drinks and walk along the Cape Fear River. What's the vibe? What's the scene right now in the face of this pandemic?
You know, what's amazing, amazing down here, Jeff, is that our young activists in the wake of the murder of George Floyd have been down there on the steps of City Hall every day since he was murdered. And I have been in constant communication with them, and they are inspirational, to say the least. And consequently, we have two less Confederate monuments in downtown Wilmington than just a few days ago. Those were cloaked and removed by the city council for safekeeping or for whatever purpose, but they are off their pedestals and they are in an undisclosed location. So much, much has changed. I'll tell you, I really believe that collectively, we have all decided, I hope, that we refuse to unsee what we have seen. Watching George Floyd's life ebb from his body has been something that has impacted me very, very strongly. And I believe that we have turned a corner in our society. I certainly hope so, because many of the things that we're seeing happen right now are long overdue. And I just feel very optimistic for the future.
So you mentioned the two Confederate monuments that came down. I know that there had been a push to get you and the mayor and others to do this. I realize it's not that simple. You were not the one who decided to pull these down. There was some, I believe there was a petition of some sort. I read about something that had been circulating. The calls across Wilmington and New Hanover County, the state, the country, obviously have been growing as we think about the efforts and the desire, the calls to take down these monuments. You mentioned the two Confederate monuments. There were also three police officers, local police officers in Wilmington, who were recently fired. This was after an audit of a dashboard camera uncovered what amounted, to my ears, as really a racial tirade. So they were sent away. I'm wondering, what is something that you've learned about the Black experience in Wilmington in the past few weeks?
Well, the language that those police officers used is some of the most horrific, painful, racist language I think I've ever heard. And again, you know, Wilmington, for some reason, just seems to make the news for all the wrong reasons sometimes. But it's poetic justice, because the very new, I think he had been initiated maybe the week before, Chief Williams, an African-American chief of police who was born in the housing projects of Wilmington, grew up with a single mom, and as his first order of business, fired these three officers. And in fact, they wanted to resign and he would not allow it. So he fired them from their positions. And honestly, you know, of course that was the right move. And I just think the universe sometimes lines up to give someone an opportunity to mete out justice that is long overdue. The fact that those police officers uttered those words, even in private, is just, is terribly upsetting. And I know it's upsetting to the community, but I think that the chief handled it as best he could.
As we get into this racial reckoning conversation, people come from different places, right? Whether white, black, brown, male, female. Of course, we all fall into, you know, our own personal biographies. But I'm wondering for you if there have been particular things you've been thinking about, whether it's how you can differently or better be an ally, or things you've learned, areas of discrimination or microaggressions that perhaps you weren't aware of or hadn't fully appreciated. How has your perspective changed recently, if it's changed at all?
For me, I have decided that I am not going to be as cautious in my commentary. I'm not going to, and I'm not one for that much anyway, as you well know, but I'm not going to hedge my bets. I'm not going to soft pedal my words. I'm not going to be as judicious in the choice of them, because that's what gets us in trouble. You know, that's what stymies a movement. And I don't want to be the one that get in the way. I was just the other day talking to the young people who are down there on the steps of City Hall, and I found myself wanting to like put the reins on them, or to try to kind of get them to be more methodical, or to rein them in. And I'm like, don't do that. Don't rein them in. You know, they are the cavalry over there cresting the hill. Don't rein them in. Let them go. And as long as they're respecting the law and behaving in a lawful manner, good for them. And so that's been my epiphany.
Can you give me an example, if you have one, of an area where your commentary, perhaps you've stifled your own commentary previously?
Yes, I can. And it's about the issue of Confederate monuments. You know, I have had the opinion for a very long time that they should come down. But I've been a little timid about saying that, because I knew how explosive and upsetting it would be to a great number of people in this community. I read the words of Mitch Landrieu, you know, the former mayor of New Orleans, and they just inspired me. He wrote an op-ed, I think, in the Times a couple of years ago about the statues in New Orleans. And I thought, yes, that is exactly how I feel about it. You know, they're not just mortar and stone. They represent oppression of hundreds of years of human beings. And it is wrong. And he also said, you know, there's a difference between remembrance of the past and reverence of it. Those are two very different things. And so I regret that I didn't speak more forcefully about the removal of these monuments sooner, but I'm here now.
I would be remiss, I think, if I did not mention and remind listeners who may not be aware that June is Pride Month. And as it so happens, you and I are recording on a Sunday, and I appreciate you being willing to record on a Sunday. That was my request. Today, the 28th of June, actually marks the 51st anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, also, of course, called the Stonewall Uprising. So this date, 1969, police raided the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar in Manhattan, early in the morning. The police turned violence. The LGBT community responded. And this is an incident that is remembered as very much being a central moment in the LGBT effort for equality. So I'm wondering, I guess I'm going to try to pair these two things together. How do you celebrate or commemorate Stonewall, and how do you participate, if you do, in Pride Month?
Yeah, you know, I have participated in a lot of events over the years, marches on Washington, certainly all of the demonstrations related to AIDS and the scourge that it was. I lived in Manhattan for a while as a young lawyer and participated in just countless parades and marches and celebrations and so forth. But nothing actually is more celebratory than the two decisions from the Supreme Court in recent days. I'm talking about DACA, which of course was for our Latinx population and the Dreamers, but also the decision with Neil Gorsuch writing the opinion to talk about discrimination in the workplace. This is just a huge step forward. And so the way I celebrated Pride this month, because we're in the middle of a pandemic, was to raise a glass and toast none other than Neil Gorsuch, which felt very awkward, but I did it nonetheless.
What was in the glass?
A little bit of champagne.
All right, I'm going to go rapid fire here. Quick hitters, be as quick with these as you can, but take longer if you need to. And I'm going to tout my own horn just for a moment. Say we're 29 minutes into an interview, and I haven't mentioned the 9/11 veto override vote and the "I will not yield" statement until right now. This, of course, put you on the map nationally. You were on MSNBC, I felt like, 3-4 straight nights. But the surprise veto override vote of the budget, the I will not yield. What was the best thing that happened from your, and please categorize this if you want me to call it something else, but your impassioned anger and frustration with the speaker and with the process that day?
Having women and their teenage daughters approach me to say, thanks for standing up. Thanks for being strong. Thanks for not yielding. And to have the daughters tell me that their mothers have made them watch it 3 and 4 times. So that has been the great reward.
A couple of quick follow-ups here. Garland Shepherd, the sergeant at arms, early on in that video, looks as though he is about to remove the microphone or detain you or do something to stop that moment from playing out as it did. Did you and Garland ever have a follow-up conversation?
No, not directly, but we, you know, he's an affable character, you know, his loud jackets, his devilish grin. We've winked and nodded and smiled on many occasions. We know that there are no hurt feelings between either of us. He was just trying to do his job, and I was just trying to do mine. So there's no ill will there at all.
How many one-on-one conversations have you had with Tim Moore since September 11th of 2019?
Zero. That would be zero.
Have you tried to have any?
No, not particularly. Not one-on-one. You know, he's a pretty busy fellow, and we haven't been there much. It's not to say that I wouldn't approach him. I feel like he would probably be amenable to that. You know, I don't think he would rebuff me if I asked for such a meeting, but nor has he asked for one. So hope springs eternal that one day we'll do that.
Who's the most progressive member of the Democratic caucus in the North Carolina House?
Pricey Harrison.
COVID-19 still here, not going anywhere. Of course, also a major election year. So there's this odd dichotomy that I've been thinking about as it pertains to candidates and knocking on doors. So I'll set an over-under here of 100 doors. Are you going to knock on more or less than 100 doors in the month of July?
Yeah, I would have to say under, because I'm just not willing to, have exposures that are unnecessary. We're going to use alternative means. You know, we're learning the digital game. We're learning how to do things virtually. I'm having town halls, and I built a victory garden, and I had a tour of my victory garden just recently. And I'm also zooming into other jurisdictions across the state to help other candidates. So I really suspect that we're going to have to do this totally differently than ever before. And we'll all get the hang of it, I guess.
Deb Butler serves House District 18. That includes much of Wilmington and New Hanover County. She's a Democratic State House representative. Thank you for the conversation.
Indeed. Thank you, Jeff.
Presumably, you know the deal by now. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, subscribe, download, play, pass along to somebody that you care about or you think needs a little bit of insight into the world of state politics. Reminder. Make sure that you check out our review of Political News on Friday with Becky and Rob, Becky Gray from John Locke, Rob Schofield from NC Policy Watch. Until then, for Representative Deb Butler, I'm Jeff Tiberi. Enjoy your week.